get paid simply for the attempt. Magpie says, folding her hands over her belly and getting comfortable in her makeshift bunk. That's the beauty of it. In a situation like this, these lords are paying for the number of teams sent out, not what we retrieve. We can waste our time and his money as much as we like, and you guys get to practice. It's a great system.
She reaches into her belt without opening her eyes and holds out her stick.
Don't forget your dowsing rod.
Locke takes it from her.
Do we say anything to activate it?
Hell if I know.
I frown. Let's just go, see what we can do. If nothing else, we'll gain experience. Kip tugs on the rope as if in agreement, gesturing at the tunnel awaiting us. I nod and head after him, and the others follow. We've practiced walking well roped together, so we're not as bad at it as we could be. No one stumbles into one another, and we keep enough slack between us that we can walk comfortably. Our new tunnel, in Drop 13, doesn't have a guide rope to hold onto it, and the floor is wet and slick and slopes downward. We move carefully, and I'm glad that Kip is in the lead. Even with the wet floor, his steps are sure-footed. We lose all light, and then we have to pause as Lark readies a lantern for us. She holds it aloft on a stick, but the ceiling is so low that it bangs against the rock, sending a rain of pebbles down onto our heads and making Gwenna yelp in surprise.
Sorry,
Lark says, but she sounds on edge. We all are. This is our first experience in the tunnels, and I can't shake the feeling that we're not quite ready. Well, maybe Kip is ready. He trots into the encroaching darkness with confidence, little sword at his side. If he's as rattled as the rest of us, he doesn't show it.
I didn't realize it'd be so dark,
Meriden whispers as we move deeper into the tunnels.
I mean, I know we're underground. I guess I just wasn't prepared for this.
I understand what she means. The circle of light given off by our lantern feels small. The darkness at the edge is oppressive, like it's pushing in on us. Like it's an ocean being held back by the flimsiest of barriers, just waiting to sweep over us once more. She's right that our training in the darkness, at the river, didn't quite prepare us. At the river, there was moonlight and the stars overhead. Here, there's only the ceiling overhead, so low I can touch it with an outstretched hand, and leagues of rock, just waiting to collapse our tunnel. I shove those thoughts out of my head. If Large Hawking Hawk can do this, if dozens of other Taurians can do this, I can do it too. I ignore the resentment that bubbles inside me. Magpie should be here. Hawk should be here. Someone should be at our side guiding us. Instead, Hawk's busy trying to save the guild from itself, and Magpie's taking a nap. We're on our own. We're silent as we creep along in the tunnel until it opens up. Then suddenly, it goes from a cramped passageway into a warren of side tunnels. There's a discarded pickaxe off to one side and a broken rope, proof that others have been here in the past. Kip stops, and Lark swings the lantern around to the entrance of the other tunnels. Five, no, six, spread out like a fan before us.
Which way?
She asks, looking at me. How am I supposed to know? You're the navigator.
Shit, right.
She makes a face.
I don't feel much like a navigator, gotta admit.
She gestures at the nearest tunnel.
That one, maybe?
We head down it for a time, only for the tunnel to twist and turn and branch off repeatedly. Some of the branchings go for nothing more than a few feet, but some descend into the darkness for quite a ways. Lark gets skittish as we pass yet another deep branching tunnel.
I don't know that we should go down.
You don't have a good feeling about it?
Meriden asks. I don't have a good feeling about any of this, Locke confesses. I don't want to be the one who gets us lost.
You won't, I reassure her. If we get lost, Hawk will come and find us anyhow. They sent us down with a retrieval beacon, and Hawk knows these tunnels better than anyone. He's always down here.
My belly flutters at the thought of my husband.
Not for the first time. I wish he was here with us, instead of Magpie. He wouldn't have abandoned us to take a nap in the larger cave. He'd be right here with us, offering advice. I try to imagine what Hawk would say if he was with us.
Let's just consider today a scouting expedition, I tell them. We'll get a feel for things, explore a little, and then return to camp to rest and check in on Magpie. Once we're comfortable, then we'll start looking for something to bring back.
How will we know where to start digging? Gwenna asks. You've read a bunch of books about this place. What did they say?
I'm starting to realize just how much information my books have left out. Because everyone in those books always seemed to automatically know where to dig and how deep. They'd just stick their pickaxes into a wall and magical artifacts would fall out. Looking around me, I know that's not the case. One rocky wall looks the same as the next, and the farther we go in, the less of old Prell there is. There are no broken bricks here, no bits of pottery or statues. And I'm reminded that Drop 13 is considered unlucky. There, even.
We'll know when we see it.
We continue exploring for the next while, just to try to get comfortable with the caves. I can't help but notice that every time I look back, Gwenna, Lark, and Meriden are all clustered together, holding on to one another. I don't blame them. I want to do the same, but only Kip's brave exploration keeps me from joining their huddle. Somehow, when I'd pictured myself as a fearless excavator, it had been more glamorous and more well-lit than this. I'd pictured artifacts just falling into my hands with a bare modicum of digging. This is going to be a lot of work.
Let's try one more tunnel before we head back, I suggest after a time, when we make it back to the fanned array of passages. We can tell Magpie that we were looking for the best place to spend our efforts. Lark, pick us a tunnel. She points at one, and Kip heads off in that direction. I follow after him, holding my shield up, even though it feels as if it's made of lead at this point. Maybe Lark and I should switch, I muse as we head into the dark tunnel. The ceiling is a little lower here, but nothing we haven't seen before. I'd rather be navigator, I think, than carry around a heavy shield all day long. Something brushes against my hair. I look up, and Locke's bobbing light illuminates a maze of spiderwebs on the ceiling. Long black legs move, and then my hair twitches again. I raise a hand to the top of my head and encounter something that shouldn't be there. With a shriek, I fling the spider off my head and onto the floor of the cave. It's the size of my hand, the legs long and disgusting, and with hairs so thick even my bad eyes can make them out. Another spider drops onto my shoulder, and then Meriden gives a horrified squeal, knocking one from Locke's cloak. Back! I scream. Back the way we came! We race from the tunnel, crying out in horror and shaking out our clothes. The lantern bobs, making me dizzy as the light wobbles back and forth. But then we're back at the fan of tunnels, and I drop my shield, shaking out all of my clothing over and over again in disgust. Hawk did mention he hated spiders. I should have listened. I glance over to see if Kip has followed, since the rope between us is taut. He emerges a few moments later, a long, dark leg disappearing into his mouth.
Ew.
I think that's enough for me tonight, Gwenna says,
raking her fingers through her now loose hair. She shudders. Can we please just go back to Magpie and decide on our next steps?
I'm totally fine with that. I nod, and Meridin is in agreement too.
Kip shrugs, and then puts a rock in the center of the tunnel entrance, marking it. Good idea. Though he might be marking it for snacks, while the rest of us want to mark it as no, never again.
Picking up my shield, I gesture that Gwenna should lead the way now, since she's at the front of the line, and we head back the way we came. We're all a little quieter now that the truth of what the tunnels are like is setting in. My thoughts are swirling, comparing the reality of the tunnels with what I had imagined. I'm not disappointed, not precisely, but I can't help wishing that Hawk was here. Something tells me he'd understand more than anyone else. Or maybe I'm just making excuses because I really want to talk to him. When the caverns open back up and we see the faint distant light of Magpie's encampment, I realize I'm exhausted. Some of the dampness of my clothing is sweat, as we've been hiking through tunnels all day long. Gwenna looks as tired as I am, and Lark and Meridin, too.
How long do you think we've been gone?
Meridin asks.
How do we tell time down here?
Well, my stomach won't stop growling,
Lark says, patting her gut.
And I normally don't get hungry until well past dinner time, so I'd say it's late. I'm ready to eat some shitty rations and go to sleep, and...
She stops, silenced, and I peer around her. The camp is a disaster. Our bags have been tossed about, our food supplies flung onto the ground. The extra canteens we left behind are sitting in puddles of their contents. Our bedding is gone or slashed to ribbons, our changes of clothing equally destroyed. Magpie is sprawled face down amongst the mess.
Auntie!
Lark cries, surging forward. Immediately, we're all knocked off our feet, Lark included, as she forgets we're all still tied together. She crawls forward as we struggle to stand upright again.
Auntie Magpie, is she dead?
Gwenna helps Meridin to her feet just as a loud, garish snore echoes in the cavern.
She's not dead, Gwenna retorts. She's fucking drunk.
Lark goes to her aunt's side, flipping her onto her back and shaking her awake. The rest of us focus on untying the ropes, not saying anything.
Auntie Magpie,
Lark says, tapping her cheek.
Wake up.
Magpie comes awake with a snort, then rubs her eyes. She rolls out of her blankets, and the sound of empty bottles clank over loud in the cavern. I exchange a look with Gwenna.
Well, what?
Magpie says, wiping her mouth. She peers at Lark.
What is it? What happened? You tell us. What happened to the camp?
Magpie sits up, blinking. It takes her a moment to realize our supplies have been destroyed. She picks up one chunk of hardtack and nibbles on it despite the dirt on the cavern floor.
Rattlings, maybe.
Oh, come on, Gwenna protests. It's not rattlings.
Magpie flops back onto her pallet.
You don't know that.
Would rattlings have left you alone while you sprawled, passed out drunk? Or would they have attacked you?
Gwenna shakes her head and picks up a torn piece of blanket.
This was clearly someone trying to sabotage us.
Oh, gods. Is it Barnabas? Is he somehow sending his minions after us?
Who would want to do that?
Meridin asks, handing me the unknotted rope so I can free myself.
Literally anyone with a penis,
Gwenna exclaims, gesturing at our group.
Look at how they've been treating us since we've arrived. They don't like the thought of more women in their precious guild, or a Slytherskin,
and they're doing their best to let us know that we're not wanted.
Oh, or that. It could be that. I pull the rope free from my belt and collapse on the floor, overwhelmed. I want my spectacles, because I don't want to run into more spiders. I want to lie down and rest my head, but my blanket is shredded, or gone entirely. I want to eat and go to sleep with my arms around my cat and not have to worry about Barnabas or about other men in the guild sabotaging us. I want to not have to worry about Magpie spending her time drinking instead of teaching us. I want to not worry if my Taurian husband hates me, or if Barnabas is going to expose me to the guild, or simply just try to take over my father's hold. I'm so fucking tired of it all.
Seriously, Auntie Magpie, how could you?
Locke gives her aunt a disappointed look.
How are we ever going to succeed if you're sabotaging us too?
Oh, grow up. Magpie snaps at Locke. You think they're ever going to let any of you in? They hate women in the guild. Trust me, I know. They're going to let you play at being guild artificers and never pass you. I figured if I brought you down here, you could at least get a taste of things. Don't fucking blame me.
Her words just make the ache in my chest even worse. She's right. The men of the guild have made it clear that they don't respect us. Even if we did find something, what would be the point? It'd just help Barnabas. I'm damned if I do, damned if I don't. Gwenna cleans up around camp, while Meriden and Lark work on helping Magpie sober up. Kip takes the water skins and heads off to the nearest drip in the rocks to refill them. And I sit on my ass and feel sorry for myself, swiping tears as they fall down my cheeks. When things are tidied, Gwenna comes and sits at my side.
Are you done?
I feel pretty done at the moment, yes.
I sniff harder.
I don't know why I ever thought I could do this.
No, no. I meant, are you done feeling sorry for yourself?
She nudges me with her shoulder.
I recognize that look on your face. The woe is me, I'm just a holder's daughter, life is so hard expression.
Shame moves over me.
I'm not.
Look, is this a shit show? Absolutely. She watches Meriden and Lark help Magpie do laps around the room, trying to walk off the alcohol and sober our teacher up. Then she turns back to me.
Is everything stacked against us?
Undoubtedly.
But when have you let that stop you before?
I rub my brow.
There's no way I come out ahead in any of this, Gwenna. I'm so tired of fighting against the tide.
You don't give up. That's not who you are, Asbeth. You make the best of whatever you're given, always.
And the best case scenario here is what? Finding an artifact? I spread my hands wearily. And then it's given to Barnabas, who's going to use it against my father and steal his hold. I don't want to help Barnabas.
Then we don't, Gwenna says, as if it's that simple.
What if we find something, a treasure of some kind, a magical artifact? We have to turn it over. That's guild law.
We're not in the guild yet, are we?
She gives me a pert look.
If we find something, and that's a pretty big if from where I'm sitting, we talk to Meriden and Lark and Kip. We explain the situation and offer to compensate them in some way. Maybe we give up our shares for a few fines in order to pay them back.
My eyes get misty. You'd do that for me?
Of course I would. I think they would too. You're part of our five. You're our friend.
I manage a smile.
Or maybe we sell whatever we find and keep the funds and you can send those home to your father. Gwenna brightens. Or maybe it will all be made easy for us.
Maybe we'll find an urn of ever-giving netherpox, and we hand it over to Barnabas after all. Who can say what the future holds? I giggle. I can't help it. My point is, my friend, that you've come this far. Why would you let a man like him defeat you now? I gesture at our surroundings. At the dank cavern, where somewhere spiders are still lurking, waiting to drop onto our hair, where another team is out there with our stuff, laughing and patting themselves on the back for screwing us over. This just isn't what I expected it to be, you know? What in life is? She nudges me with her shoulder again, the gesture friendly. We'll get some sleep, and things will be better in the morning. We'll rough it tonight, like the professionals. And then we'll wake up in the morning and we'll go looking for artifacts like we're supposed to. Like we want this job. Because I would much rather dig for buried treasure in a cavern than change out the chamber pots of spoiled nobles. No offense. None taken. There's a nudge at my other side, and then Kip is there, holding out a chunk of hardtack. He offers it to me with a little smile, and I take it from him gratefully. He holds another chunk out to Gwenna. This is marvelous of you, she says. Where did you have this stashed? He pats the edge of his house, as if that answers everything, and then trots away to share with the others. I love that little guy, Gwenna says. He's good people. Or Slitherskins, whatever. She takes a bite of her hardtack and watches the others. You know, it's not just your life that's difficult. Meriden doesn't want to go back to the convent. Oh? Her father made her join the church. She didn't want to, but he's very religious and felt that one of their children should be an offering to Asteria to bring fortune on their house. She told me once that no one at the temple would talk to her, though, that it was a sect of silence, and they believed they were closest to the goddess when they were quiet. That's why she pushed to come here and join the guild. She was desperate to get out of there. It sounds awful. I imagine it was. And has Lark ever told you about her parents? It feels a little like I'm being lectured, but it's all information I should probably hear. She hasn't. Their family was poor. Magpie joined the guild, but her sister didn't have the skills. She ended up working in a brothel. She named her daughter Lark because she was jealous of everything Magpie had. Wanted her to have a bird name so she could be as special as Magpie, too. Of course, we know that's not how it works, but what can you do? She shrugs. The father wasn't known. Lark almost ended up whoring, too. But she ran away when she was a teenager and joined a troop of traveling fortune tellers. She's pretty good with cards, by the way. Absolute shit with juggling. No idea how she managed to make a living at it. I had no idea about any of this. I've been wrapped up in my own situation, and, well, in my relationship with Hawk. I didn't know. You've had your new husband monopolizing your time, so no one blames you. She pats my knee and takes another bite of hardtack. As she chews, she continues. Kip, well, I'm not entirely sure what's going on with him because he doesn't talk. But I imagine it's not perfect. My point is that everyone's life has shitty aspects to it. You're just getting all of yours piling on at once. But you'll get through this. She sounds so confident, so certain. What if this all goes horribly, and I have no choice but to marry Barnabas after all? Then we give you the urn of ever-giving netherpox, and you make his life a living hell. I laugh again, but it's sounding a little hysterical. I'm already married, though, and Hawk doesn't want me either. Gwenna gives me an impatient look. Why are you making problems for yourself, Aspeth? It's a marriage of convenience, remember? It's still convenient for both of you. Figure out what's going on between the two of you once it's no longer convenient. Until then,
Stop worrying about it.
She's right. Gwenna's practical advice sinks in, and I can feel the truth of it. Why am I making problems for myself? Does it matter if Hawk likes me as much as I like him? He needs a partner for his conquest moon, and I need someone I can point to and say is my chaperone. Nothing else is needed. I reach over and give her hand a squeeze. You're a good friend.
I'm a mediocre friend, she corrects. I'm an amazing maid, but I'd rather be a mediocre friend.
Her smile grows wider.
Or an even more mediocre guild fledgling.
New goal, I agree, laughing. We both shall strive to become the height of guild mediocrity.
Hear, hear, she says, and holds up her hardtack in a toast.
26. Asbeth. 4 days before the conquest moon. When I wake up from sleep, I'm sore but resolute. My neck aches from using my scrap-filled backpack as a pillow, and I'm a little chilled from sleeping on bare rock. My clothes are damp and my stomach is empty, but I'm determined. I'm not going to let Barnabas beat me. I'm going to join the guild. I'm going to figure out how to protect my father and his hold, and everything will be fine. Everything will be fine, I repeat to myself over and over as I rub my aching back. Everything will be fine, I chant silently as Magpie groans and pukes on the floor nearby, clearly hungover. Everything will be fine, I tell myself as I pick up my shield for the day, and it feels as if it weighs 1,000 pounds. If men like Rooster can do this, I can certainly do this. Strangely enough, thinking of Rooster helps. I picture that squat, odious little man besting me at anything guild-related, and it lights a fire under my arse. I straighten and beam at the others who look as if they've had a rough night. Let's get ready to head out, everyone. Time's wasting.
What do we do about Magpie? Lark asks, glancing over at her aunt.
Same as we did yesterday, I tell them briskly. She can guard what's left of our things. It won't do us any good to drag her along. Kip hands out more bits of hardtack, smaller bites than yesterday's portion, but I'm still grateful to have them. And we rope ourselves together while Magpie pulls a shredded blanket over her head.
Which way should we go?
Meriden asks, looking to Lark. Lark shrugs.
As long as there's no spiders, I don't care. Anyone else have a preference?
Gwenna looks to me. So does Kip. It makes sense. I'm the expert, after all. I think for a moment. One of the tunnels sloped downward for a bit. I think we'll head there and see if there are any changes in the rock. The other sections of the cavern were littered with rubble from the city. If we can see a crosscut of the rock itself, maybe we'll know how far down or up we have to go to hit the ruins. I don't know if what I'm saying is accurate, but it sounds pretty good to me. Kip gives his shell a firm, hard rap, as if agreeing. He hops to his feet and looks over at us, his hand on his sword belt. I nod and follow after him. It's hard to track time in the tunnels. Lark's using an oil lantern with a slow-burning wick, so it's impossible for me to tell if hours pass as we travel deeper, or if it simply feels like it. We take our time today, looking over the rock walls carefully. If we go too deep, we could miss the levels of the ruins entirely. So we need to find the layer of rock and debris where the ruins are. It's just that we keep finding nothing at all, no matter how many twists of the tunnel we head down, or how much we stare at the rocky walls of the cavern. We take a break, and when Kip pulls more hardtack out of his shell, I realize it must be lunchtime. I try not to think about the spider legs disappearing into his mouth,
and focus on being grateful for the food he kept stored away for us. So far, the morning has been a bust.
What about the dowsing rod?
Meriden asks, looking up at me as she licks her fingertip and uses it to pick up the crumbs on her cleavage, then eats them.
You think that would work?
I shrug. I have no idea.
Don't dowsing rods find water?
Aunt Magpie thinks that anyone with Prellian blood will be able to find artifacts.
Locke offers.
Magic calling to magic and all that.
I can safely say I do not have old Prellian blood, I point out. The ancestry of my father's hold goes back 300 years at the very same spot, and even before that, our ancestors were mountain folk. Old Prell was not anywhere near the mountains. Shame. I would love to have magical blood.
We can take turns, Locke says, pulling the stick out. It can't hurt, right?
I want to point out that it sounds like a silly waste of time, but what if I'm wrong? They've been relying on my so-called expertise all morning, and I've led them nowhere.
Can't hurt,
I agree, and gesture at her.
You want to give it the first shot?
She hands the staff with the lantern over to Meriden and takes the dowsing rod in her hands. It's a simple stick with a fork on one end, an uneven fork, I can't help but notice, and she closes her eyes and concentrates.
Lead us to the riches of Old Prell.
Locke holds it out and turns around slowly, making a full circle. After she does this twice, she squeezes one eye open and looks at us.
I'm supposed to feel something, right?
I have no idea. I shrug. I've never used a dowsing rod. No one else has either. Kip takes it next and closes his eyes, turning in a circle before shrugging and handing it back. Meriden looks equally uncertain when she takes her turn and says she doesn't trust herself to tell if it's tugging or if it's her imagination.
Oh, come on,
Gwenna protests as I take the rod.
Someone has to feel something, don't they?
You would think. I try closing my eyes and turning, but it just feels like I'm holding a stick and spinning in a circle in an underground cavern. Which I am. I open my eyes and shrug.
Are we sure we're supposed to feel it, or do we just have to go on instinct?
Here, let me give it a try and then we'll give up on this stupid thing,
Gwenna says, holding her hand out. I hand it over to her. She gives it a little flick as if shaking it into submission.
Now, show us something so we can move on with our lives.
The stick jumps in her hands. At least it looks as if it does. We all gasp, even Kip, and take a step back. Gwenna flings it away from herself, and the stick skids across the floor. At the edge of the light, I can see it slowly come to a stop, pointing down one particular tunnel. I look over at my former maid.
What did you do?
I didn't do anything, she protests.
She wrings her hands, frowning.
All I did was pick it up.
Locke nudges her from behind.
Pick it up again.
Gwenna looks reluctant. She eyes me, seeking advice. I shrug because I have no idea. This wasn't in any book I ever read. She takes the rod between two fingers as if it's filthy and grimaces.
I don't have magic in my blood.
Maybe you do.
Meriden breathes, her eyes wide.
Maybe you're descended from a secret line of Prellian kings.
It's more likely that I was descended from Prellian maids, she retorts,
but slowly, calmly, grips the stick again and points it at the nearest cavern wall.
All right. If you can show us to the artifacts, please do.
The stick twitches in her grip, and we all jump. As I watch, she turns slowly, a
and it's as if the stick is pulling her forward. She surges ahead, the rope pulling taut as she takes the lead. "Wait," I cry. "Let's turn around. Lark, get closer to her so you can light the way." We reshuffle ourselves while the stick twitches and jumps in Gwenna's grasp as if impatient. When Kip and I are at the back, Gwenna takes the lead again, letting the stick point the way. We follow behind it as it takes us down one of the tunnels we've already walked a half dozen times, surging forward. The tunnel ends in a rock fall, full of massive boulders, and it's far too much for our measly pickaxes to handle. So we had turned around. "I promise I'm not doing this," Gwenna calls back to us as it leads us on deeper into the collapsed tunnel. "It's like it's alive when I touch it." "Just find us something to take back," Locke tells her. "We won't tell anyone that you're a mancer." Gwenna jerks to a halt. "I'm not a mancer."
"But someone in your family lineage might have been," Meriden says helpfully.
Gwenna's jaw clenches and she gives me a worried look. "I'm not a mancer," she says again, and continues down the tunnel. "No one's accusing you of being a mancer," I say soothingly. "It's a valid fear. Personal magic has been outlawed since the Mancer Wars, and all mancers were put to death by the king. Poor Gwenna is going to be terrified if Meriden keeps bringing it up, and I make a mental note to talk to her about it later." We follow along for a time as the tunnel narrows. Gwenna frowns to herself as she lets it drag her along, and then the stick seems to turn, leading us back the way we came and away from the rock fall. The stick stops her halfway down, pointing at the wall of the tunnel.
"I wasn't sure, but right here. It keeps finding something right here."
"It's a wall," Locke points out unhelpfully.
"Well, there's something on the other side."
"You're sure?"
Gwenna sputters at Locke, furious.
"Of course I'm not sure. We're following a fucking stick."
I put a hand up and step between the two. "All right, let's calm down. It's the best lead we have, even if it's a stick. So we might as well give things a try."
I glance over at the cavern wall. It, well, looks like solid rock.
"We can try to break through and see what we find. Does everyone have their pickaxes?"
Meriden raises her hand. "What if we collapse the tunnel because we hammer too hard on the wall?"
I stare at her. By the gods, does she have to bring up something like that?
"Then Hawk will come and rescue us," I say promptly. "But if you've got a better idea of a place to dig, I'd like to hear it."
When no one speaks up, I gesture at the wall that the dowsing rod had singled out.
"All right, then. Let's give it a try. And if you feel like the tunnel is about to collapse, say something."
Kip huffs at that, but he's the first one to strike the wall. I pick up my pickaxe and strike at the wall, too, though I don't know how much good I'm doing. I can't swing full strength because we're all still roped together and standing close to one another. I'm also tired and hungry and a little wary of hammering away at what looks like solid rock. But we set to work anyhow, because a stick told us to. It doesn't take long before the solid-looking rock cracks under one of Meriden's strikes. Then, like a fragile eggshell, it shatters in a dozen places as we poke at it. Soon, we have a hole in the wall, and when Lark shoves the lantern toward it, we can see a chamber on the other side.
"It's hollow?"
I exchange a look with Gwenna. The dowsing rod wasn't wrong. There really was something on the other side.
"Should we go through?"
"Unless you just wanted to knock a hole through the wall and leave,"
Locke retorts.
"Come on, get the rod again, and let's see what's on the other side."
"So brave now, are we?"
Gwenna murmurs. Kip is the first one through, the slither skin seemingly fearless despite this newest reveal.
I step through after him, clutching my shield at the shadows around us. The tunnel behind us was smooth, but even with Lark's bobbing light still on the other side, I can see there are a lot more shapes here. I squint at the shadows as something decidedly human looms in the darkness. I step over someone's pack, my heart pounding. Have we broken through the wall to the other team? Are we going to get into trouble now? But then, Lark's light bobs its way onto our side, and with relief, I see that the form isn't human at all. It's a statue of a man, the stern expression on his face and the headdress denoting it as Prelian. It stands nearly upright, a beautiful work of art amidst the rubble.
Oh my gods! Meridin cries.
What? Gwenna asks from the other side of the rock. What is it? It's a body. Lark replies, and her voice is hushed with horror. I chuckle. I thought the same thing too, but it's a statue, a lovely one. I want to move forward to touch it, but the rope is taut between us, and no one seems to be stepping deeper into the new cavern except me. I can't take my eyes off the thing, though. The face is expressive, the lines around the mouth conveying a stern disapproval, even as the figure cradles a child with a circlet to his breast. A king and his heir, possibly. I've seen that in other Prelian art. Asbeth. Lark moves to my side and grabs me by the arms. She points at the carving I'm so enamored with. That is a statue. She forcibly turns me and points at the ground. That is a fucking body. I stare. I thought I'd stepped over a backpack. That in our efforts to get through the new hole into the chamber, someone had discarded their pack, and I'd simply moved over it, far more fascinated with the ruins in front of us. But it is a body. Gwenna kneels next to it, peeling back an old faded cloak that falls apart in her grasp. There's nothing left of the body but a skeleton and some rusty bits of armor. At his side is a lump that might have once been a pack, but is now just another rotted blob. Fuzzy greenish lichen grows over everything, and a worm crawls out of one of the empty eye sockets of the skull. I scream, Meridin screams, Lark screams and bolts for the other side of the wall. We stumble after her, the rope tugging on us and adding to the sense of urgency. I'm dimly aware of Kip racing at my side, of Meridin's hand on my back as we run through the tunnel, following after Lark's bobbing light.
Where are you going?
Gwenna cries, her voice behind us.
I don't fucking know, Lark cries back. Away.
Away, sounds good.
I race with them, and the tunnels slope upward. No one points out that we're heading toward Magpie and camp. No one needs to. The camp feels the safest right now. The tunnel walls seem to close in around us, the darkness and stale air oppressive, until I'm sobbing with fear, and I'm not the only one. I can hear Meridin's thin whimpers filling the tunnels, along with Lark's heaving breaths. We don't stop until a figure appears at the end of the tunnel. It's Magpie, holding up a lantern. Lark collapses at her feet, gasping.
Oh, thank gods, you heard us.
Heard what?
Magpie asks. There's a tight, unhappy look on her face. I clutch at the stays of my corset, gasping for breath. I want to tell her what we found, that the dowsing rod worked. But then the shadows behind her move, and I realize she's not alone. A very large and very grim-faced Taurian is right behind her. Hawk.
Shit.
27. Asbeth. 3 days before the conquest moon. Apparently, when one finds a dead body in the tunnels, a not uncommon occurrence, one must call in the guild authorities. Our tunnel is roped off, sealed with guild flags, and Magpie wastes no time shouting at us as Drop 13 is closed off to R5.
You were supposed to be looking for artifacts, not bodies, she tells us. Idiots.
Why is anyone even dousing at all? It's nothing but mucking fairy tales.
Hawk growls. We're silent, chastised. Well, except for Gwenna. She glares at Magpie as if she's responsible for our troubles.
Maybe he had an artifact on him, Meriden says in a small voice.
He didn't.
Hawk's voice is harsh, and he hasn't stopped scowling since we ran into him. It's been nearly a full day of guild rigmarole and politics since we returned. The guild wants to claim the new chamber because guild law states that a dead body must be investigated. Magpie wants to have the drop because she claims that it's ours until we release it back to the guild, that we've staked our claim and anything found there will belong to her house. In the meantime, a team has returned with preliminary information while we rested, cleaned up, and ate, and guild healers looked us over. It seems that our collapsed tunnel was not always collapsed, and that the spot we doused at was the thinnest spot in the walls to get through to the other chamber. The new chamber is the remains of an old bathhouse, which excites me. Some of the most interesting things have been found in old Prell's drains, and now that I'm over being scared of a corpse, I want to return and see what we can find.
Absolutely not.
Hawk says, and he's in agreement with the guild. His expression is ice cold as he regards us, as if we've done something wrong.
It's our claim, Magpie argues with him, and that body was ancient. He wasn't guild, he wasn't even a guild ancestor. He might have dated back to Prell himself.
How was there so much of him left? Gwenna asks.
There was hardly anything, Locke protests. He was nothing but bugs and bones.
Natron, I say absently. The others in my group turn to me, and I continue explaining. It's well documented that the lichen that grows in the tunnels produces natron. It slows down the decay of everything. It's one reason why the bodies in the tombs last for so long down in the ever below.
I find it creepy that you know that, Meriden says.
Kip looks rather disgusted, too. Hawk doesn't budge.
I don't care if that corpse was from yesterday or from old Prell. Let the guild determine if it's safe before you send a pack of fledglings back down there.
Then you come with us, I say brightly. You can watch over us, and we can excavate and look for artifacts. Truly, I'm thinking of all the things my father's pipes master has found in the hold's sewer lines. Rings, necklaces, carved toys. He'd once found a hand. And while I don't relish the thought of finding that, I'd be happy with nearly everything else, especially if the cavern has been collapsed for so long that it hasn't been ransacked by the guild yet. The look he shoots me is positively hair-curling. And for a moment, I wonder what I've done wrong to incite such anger from him.
You and I need to talk.
We're talking right now. He moves to my side and grabs me by the arm, escorting me out of the dorm's kitchen, which has become our unofficial meeting area. I trot at his side, a knot in my throat, and a flutter in my stomach, because the last time he was high-handed with me, we'd practically fornicated in an alley. And I'm utterly shameless, because the thought of doing so again excites me.
You're not going down there again.
He tells me the moment he has me in the hall.
Absolutely not.
If you go with us, we'll be safe, I say, my expression encouraging. I trust you.
Do you?
He arches a brow, and then looms over me, his arm braced over my head. I get the impression that I'm supposed to be afraid, that he's using his power and build to try to intimidate me into seeing things his way, but it just turns me on. Of course I trust you. You're my husband.
Then tell me who you met at the tavern the other night, and I'll go with you,
he says, his voice silky smooth.
I'll tell Magpie to send you down again, and I'll supervise. I just need a name, Aspeth.
My entire body locks up and I go cold. It's no one important, I swear.
Then tell me a name.
I can't. He gazes down at me, his expression full of frustration.
I wonder about you sometimes.
I promise I'm not very exciting, I tell him, my expression falsely bright. I'm just a woman who loves old Prel and wants nothing more than to study it. I reach up and caress his face, so strange from my own, yet so comfortably familiar already. That's all there is to me.
Is that so?
He leans in ever so slightly.
I think you're lying, Lady Aspeth Honori.
The breath catches in my throat. My name. He knows my name and who I am. I'm fucked.
28. Hawk, earlier, 5 days before the Conquest Moon. There's nothing quite like having a new wife to make you question your sanity. I should be upset over the stranger she met at the inn. I should be furious. I should march down there and question every person who's ever gone in and out those doors and not let up until I get an answer. But the Conquest Moon is coming closer and closer. That annoying circle in the sky shining brighter with every day, and it's making me irrational. I'm upset over Aspeth meeting a stranger, true, but when I try to think about that night, all I can think of are the soft cries she made as I ground my cock against her skirts. The way her slick cunt felt under my fingers. The way she watched the others with such avid interest. It's the rut that won't let me focus on anything but her, and I don't trust myself to climb into bed next to her that night, or any of the next several. Last night, I stayed in the kitchen, drinking an herbal tea that's supposed to deaden the hunger that the Conquest Moon brings on. Magpie's up early, and when she sees me, she pounces.
Good, you're here.
Where else would I be?
There's a quick job the guild needs done today,
she says.
A retrieval. Some idiot left his sword in Drop Seven's tunnels, and it's got sentimental value to him. He can't get it because he broke his foot. I told Rooster you'd do it.
I get to my feet, my thoughts flooding with Aspeth in bed. Aspeth pinned to the alley wall. Aspeth squinting at my cock. The last thing I want to do is leave her side, which is exactly why I should. Fine. It's a job. It's a distraction. And I can put everything off for a few more hours. But you're taking them into the tunnels for a practice run today, aren't you? I should be there.
That got delayed,
Magpie reassures me.
I had to file for an additional permit, so we could have an extra teacher. It's going to take another day before we're able to head down. You have time to do this.
I don't think anything of it. The guild is constantly asking for more permits, as people like Rooster, who loves bureaucracy, take charge. I head off and retrieve the sword, and it's exactly where it was supposed to be. Foolish to waste manpower picking up someone else's discards, but if they want to pay for this, I'll take the coins. But when I return, the nest is empty. All is quiet, the lights out. Aspeth isn't in bed, and the only person at home is her fat cat, his face planted in his overflowing food dish. I reach down and give him a pet, only to huff with annoyance when a fistful of loose cat hair comes up. Has any creature ever shed as much as this one? Where's your mistress?
Meow,
is all Squeaker says. Fucking Magpie. I know what's happened here. I bet if I went to the guild, there'd be no permit for a second teacher on the excursion. She just wanted me out of her hair so she could be in charge of the team. But I've taken the last few down without her putting up a single word of protest. I don't understand why she'd maneuver around me now. Unless I crossed the house, looking for the place I stashed her liquor. I'd pried up a floorboard when she told me to hide it all from her. And when I get to the place in the cellar where it's hidden, the bottles are still there. That doesn't tell me much. She can just buy more if she's determined. But I'm suspicious of her actions. She doesn't want me around for a reason. Until I figure out what that reason is, I'm not going to rest easy. I pet the cat for a moment more, thinking about his mistress. Even though Magpie can't be trusted, Aspeth should be safe enough with her, I think. I'm reminded of how cagey Aspeth looked when I dragged her from the bar, and think about Gwenna's words. She knew who Aspeth was meeting, I'd wager. Went on and on about how people in Aspeth's life didn't give her the love she needed. People in Aspeth's past. So it's someone from her past that she met at the bar. The next morning, I decide to find out what I can about my bride. I have connections with other Taurians in the city. We all look out for one another. Most are employed by the guild in some manner, but there are some who choose to work alongside humans in a variety of jobs. I know one old Taurian who used to work security for a network of merchants along the coast. Now that he's older, he organizes security for those same merchants, and he knows everyone. It's a good place to start. I bring him a gift, a box of vegetable buns from a popular Taurian baker in Vast Warren, and drop by his house in the merchant's quarter. We catch up for a while, eating sticky buns covered in carrot shreds and dried fruit, and talk about the upcoming conquest moon. Hadder has a wife, an older human woman, and so he's not troubled by it, even though I'm surprised he's still in the city. He chuckles. The god's hand is a problem only for males younger than me. I'm too old for his grip to hold me strongly. All it does is give my wife a few exciting nights in bed, and then we go back to our normal lives. His eyes twinkle, and he tosses his white-streaked mane. But it's good to know the equipment remains functional. Do you still work with merchants? I ask, even though I already know the answer. I'm looking for one, or his daughter, specifically. We have a merchant's daughter in the guild apprentices this year. Her name's Aspeth. Older daughter, very bookish. Pretty? I can feel my face heat and resist the urge to tug on my nose ring. Yes, dark hair. About 30, I think. Nice figure. Won't tell anyone where she's from, but I get the impression that it was money. Lots of money. Know of any merchants who fit that profile? He rubs the tuft of goatee under his chin, considering. A merchant with a pretty daughter that's unmarried. Very unlikely. Most marry them off as soon as they get tits, looking to make another connection. Is it possible he's not very wealthy? A niche market of some kind? I think of Aspeth and her knowledge of old Prel. It would be someone who could get his hands on obscure tomes, someone with a lot of clout. Someone who wouldn't need the money marrying off his only daughter would bring in. No, I think wealthy, exceedingly so. And someone in the household has more than a passing interest with old Prel. Who doesn't? It's a land of riches, he chuckles and shakes his head. No one comes to mind on my end. But I know another Taurian who works with holders. I turn my head and spit. Bah! No holders. Spoiled lordlings. He raises a hand in the air. I know. A necessary evil. Trust me, I'm not thrilled to work with him either. But I know Starion, and he works with a lot of holders. If you have a rich merchant, he'll work with holders too. I grunt because he has a point. Give me this Starion's address, and I'll pay him a visit tonight. Is your mission this urgent? It might be. I think of Aspeth and wonder what secrets she's holding. A short time later, I'm in another part of the merchant's quarter in Vast Warren, in the section that passes as a mercantile district here. Vast Warren's only export is artifacts. As those are typically handled by the guild, the mercantile district is more of a black market than anything else. I don't judge, though. I just want answers. The big Taurian, big even by my people's standards, is as genial as he is loud. He shakes my hand, his laughter booming and overly boisterous. Rooster sent you? An honor indeed. What can I help the guild with this fair day? I'm not here on guild business. I'm here on personal business. I'm looking for information on a merchant. The moment I say I'm not on guild business, he relaxes. He knocks on the table and a woman steps out of the cabinet, exhaling with relief. She flashes me a smile and hurries on to the back of the shop. What kind of merchant are you looking for? The look he gives me is sharp. Are we talking legal goods? I'm not wanting to buy something. I'm looking for the name of a merchant who might have a daughter, about age 30, bookish, loves anything old Prell, goes by the name of Aspeth. You mean Lady Aspeth Honori? She's a holder's daughter, not a merchant's. I shake my head. No, this is a merchant's daughter. He doesn't look convinced. I tell him the criteria, and his expression doesn't change. I've sold a great deal of books on old Prell to Lord Corin Honori up in the mountains. His heir is his daughter, Aspeth. Pretty girl, tall, with nice tits, spectacles. Spectacles. I shake my head. That's not her. Probably not. That one's fond of cats, too. Has this great orange beast she carries everywhere with her, he chuckles. You haven't seen a creature shed until you've seen that one. I swear it has a new coat every week. I grin, but inside I'm ice. Nothing but ice. We converse for a bit longer, and I leave my contact information, telling him to send a runner if he gets the information I'm seeking. I know he won't, of course. Because I know now that my wife, my Aspeth, was lying to me. She's not a merchant's daughter looking for adventure. She's a holder's daughter. And that means trouble. And so I storm the tunnels to retrieve my lying wife. The fledglings have found a body, which makes it easy to pull them out of the Everbelow. It takes everything I have to keep calm when all I really want to do is grab Aspeth and hold her close until the truth falls out. Or just hold her close. It's impossible to think straight with the rut almost upon me. Aspeth does her best to seem composed as we return to Magpie's nest, but she won't speak to me for most of the day. I can tell she's nervous. It's in the little twitches she makes, the constant adjusting of her sleeves and fussing with her cloak, the way she bites her cuticles. She's right to be nervous. I'm furious with her for her lies and for putting everyone in this dorm at risk. Holder business is bad business. Holders trample over everyone to get their way, and people let them. Holders live in a different reality than the rest of us. We're all underlings to them. We're nothing to them. Maybe that's what pisses me off the most. That Aspeth, as my wife, felt attainable. Real. And now I'm realizing it was all a lie. That she never intended to be my partner. That she's using me for her own ends. Because holders always use and don't give a second thought to the discarded pieces. Aspeth doesn't respond to my accusations immediately. Instead, she charges into our quarters, and when I follow her, she's on the floor with her cat, stroking the fat beast. Tufts of fur float in the air as she affectionately snuggles the animal, oblivious to the shedding.
I missed you, Squeaker,
she tells it, pressing a kiss on the orange head.
Maybe we can get you a leash and you can come with us in the future.
The Everbelow is barely safe for humans. You don't want a cat down there, I tell her, voice gruff.
No?
She looks wistful, rubbing the cat's ears.
I just hate to leave her side. She misses me when I'm gone.
Then perhaps this isn't the job for you. She winces at my harsh tone, burying her face against the cat's fur once more. Her reaction makes me feel like an unreasonable bully. Like I'm the one at fault here. I need to remember that she's lied to me constantly, every step of the way, putting my livelihood and Magpie's in danger. Aspeth's actions are selfish, which is to be expected from a holder's daughter. So I move to one of the dressers and open it, pulling out the spectacles I found after retrieving her from the inn. I thought they belonged to a former lover, but now I know the truth. You might as well put these on. No sense in pretending any longer. Aspeth hesitates, and then takes them from me. She laces the ear hooks in place with practiced motions, and then blinks up at me with eyes made owlish by the lenses.
I didn't want anyone to realize who I was because I had expensive spectacles.
No, far better to just fumble around, half-blind, I say caustically. I think of all the times she squinted at me and I mistook it for concentration. How have I been unable to see this for so long? It's downright insulting. Is this all a joke to you? Aspeth straightens, frowning up at me as she continues to pet her cat.
Why would it be a joke?
I gesture at her at a loss for words. When she tilts her head at me, I realize she truly has no idea of the magnitude of this. You're a holder's daughter, a holder's heir, and you're pretending to be a guild fledgling? My magical hand clenches into a fist. You're sabotaging the chances of the others with your lies. You fucking married me, Aspeth.
So what if I did?
Her chin goes in.